Welcome to Enlightenment of Change with Connie Whitman of Whitman & Associates. Here's Connie.
Welcome to Enlightenment of Change on webtalkradio.net. I'm your host, Connie Whitman. Now, I hope every week as you listen to the show that, number one, my guests and I, we inspire you. I hope that that's for sure. The other thing is I hope that we provide some just strategies, tips, ideas that you can run with immediately after listening to the show. For me, it's all about learn, apply, and what's the return on the investment? What's the return on your time, right? But what's the benefit to you? So please, as you tune in every week, I do hope that you gain some clarity on whatever change you're going through. And again, hopefully my guests and I provide some tips and strategies just to help a little bit. Also, to help you on your navigational road of change, I have a communication style assessment, which tells you what your communication superpowers are and how people see you in the world. The flip side also, after you take the little quiz, is you will get a report with your blind spots. Our superpowers are wonderful, but we really do need to be mindful of what our blind spots are, because sometimes that's when we shoot ourselves in the foot. So if you go to my website, whitmanassoce.com/CSA for communication style assessment. So again, Whitman Assoce and Assoce is ASSOC.com/CSA. And I do hope that helps you on your change journey and that I could be a part of that. Last big request here. I know I asked for so much on through the show. I really hope that you don't miss an episode. You'll go subscribe, rate, and review. I love when you guys write me little notes and of gratitude or something you learned from me or how I've inspired you. It touches me and it really fills my heart. So again, if you can subscribe, rate, and review, always appreciate it. So my motivational quote for today is by Shane Niemeyer, and Shane says, "Sometimes we motivate ourselves by thinking of what we want to become. Sometimes we motivate ourselves by thinking about who we don't ever want to be again." So do you struggle with addiction, or maybe you know someone who does, and do you feel alone and just lost and kind of not sure what to do to change your situation? I believe this is such an important topic, especially with everything that's going on in our world today. And of course, I have a wonderful guest for you who's going to share her own insight. And my guest and friend is Tamar Medford. Now, Tamar is a performance consultant, life coach, best-selling author, and champion for people in recovery. Since overcoming her 20-year battle with drugs, alcohol, and obesity in 2012, she has dedicated her life to empowering others to embrace their authentic selves and live up to their true potential. Tamar's mission is to help people in recovery create a life so good for themselves that they never want to go back to the old way of living. And that's why I picked the quote I picked, because I know what Tamar is all about and how inspiring she is. So please help me welcome Tamar to the show. Thank you so much for being on, my friend.
Thank you so much for having me. And that quote was really powerful and so true.
You know, and you're a podcast host as well. And when I write my intro, those little questions that I want people to think about as we enter into our discussion or before we dive in. And I always start with a motivational quote, because there's so many good ones out there. And I think that even if you just listen to the quote and think, wow, I've done my job for the day. You know what I mean? So that's why I always start with my quote and those questions, because I want our listeners to get their head wrapped around and really be part of, right, that whole experience of the podcast. So yeah, that's kind of my habit and why I do it. So thank you for liking that quote, but it's who you are, right? You're all about that moving forward and not looking back. We need to know where we came from too. And I know that you're all about that as well, but we don't want to go back in time if it was a place that wasn't good for us, right? So talk to us, if you can, first share, you know, what was it like for you growing up? Did you have a good childhood? You know, was that the cause of this addiction, right? Like, people always want to know, well, what made that happen, right?
Yeah. And it's a great question, because I think that a lot of people think that you have to go through trauma in order to become an alcoholic or an addict. And it's not true, because I had a fantastic childhood. You know, we immigrated from the Netherlands at the age of one to Canada. I had very loving parents. I had a younger brother, and they always provided an amazing life and spent lots of time with us. Now, you know, when I was probably about 8 years old, my dad decided to follow his dream of becoming a video producer. And so we moved out to British Columbia, which is on the West Coast. And we started to move around quite a bit because he was trying to, you know, find his place kind of thing. And so I became incredibly shy at that point, right? I had to always be making new friends. I was very insecure. I would always start comparing myself. And my dad was always very kind of tough love. You know, if you get a C, you could get a B. And not that I ever got B's or A's. And I know it was because I didn't, you know, apply myself. It was just because I didn't care at a certain point. But I was really shy and I really struggled to fit in. And I always felt this anxiety, right? And I struggled from anxiety and depression quite a bit when I was younger. But, you know, when I got into high school, that was even more scary because, of course, I had, you know, a few friends from elementary school, but I was terrified because I'm like, now I'm not with my little safety net and my classmates. And so at the age of 14, people started using drugs and drinking and stuff. And my parents, it was never taboo for us because we're from Europe, right? You start drinking at the age of 12. And, you know, I was always excited when I went to Holland because I could have a drink. And, you know, so it was never taboo. It was never frowned upon or anything. We could always have sips of our parents' alcohol. Mm-hmm. But I remember at the age of 14, because I didn't feel like I fit in, when I first drank and got drunk, I felt like my life went from black and white to color. Like, and that was purely because I always had this really strong desire to fit in, right? I was always looking for that confirmation from my dad, like, are you proud of me? You know, and he just kept pushing forward because he knew I had so much potential. Sure. But that is when my life changed and everything was completely different from that point on.
So talk to us about your journey into addiction. It started, so do you feel like when you look back, that was that pivotal moment at age 14, right? You went from black and white to color. Did the alcohol, do you feel like it loosened you up? Like what was that journey? Why, right?
It did. I felt like I belonged for the first time ever. I had this newfound confidence, right? I was like, people thought I was funny. Now, they could have just been laughing at me because I did a lot of stupid things in my teens. But all of a sudden, you know, when I started, a lot of people always ask me, well, how do you know? And for me, when I have a drink, I want more, right? That's when the cravings start. For most people, they have a drink and maybe they have a second. And then they start to get that buzz and they start to feel out of control. And of course, then they want to stop. But it was never like that for me. I wanted to chase that feeling. I'm like, hey, I've kind of come into my own now. Like, I'm cool. I'm part of the cool kids club. But unfortunately, because of that effect, it was anything that was mind altering. I wasn't afraid to try anything from that point on. So I had friends that started to experiment with drugs and we started doing speed and friends of mine started doing cocaine. I never got into that till a little bit later, but it was scary, but it was also that I almost felt like I needed it to be the person that I thought others wanted me to be. And I had friends die and like all this stuff happened in high school and none of it scared me enough to say, maybe I should change because this just started to become the norm for me, right? It was what I needed to numb out my feelings and how I felt.
Do you think that's what it was? Because you said initially you were shy and that you were depressed. So this kind of, it took the depression, you know, quote unquote, it took the depression away. It camouflaged, right? Because it numbed you. Is that, so you, when you're numb, you think, oh, this is better than feeling depressed. So that's why you kept chasing that, whatever those different highs were for you. Is that what happened?
It did. It covered everything up, right? When I started to feel like, oh, maybe those boys don't like me, or maybe I don't fit in with that crowd. When I drank, I didn't care. You know, it was, I could do whatever I wanted
freedom.
To. Yeah. And I never felt emotion after that, right? It was just like, I'm just going to drink this emotion away. And that's the way it went, you know, for the next 22 years.
That's crazy. Did you, after the drinking, did you find that even with the drugs, that was a struggle? Or was it mostly the drugs were just, you were just trying to chase the high?
I think drinking was my first love. That's definitely the one thing that I know will set me off. The harder drugs was more, you know, when I got into my young adult, all my friends were going off to college, university, you know, after that they were getting married, and I didn't want to miss the next party because I'm like, well, who does that at such a young age, right? And I was so wrapped up in wanting to be loved that I went from relationship to relationship to relationship, and very harmful and toxic relationships. And then I remember, you know, I was actually working at a golf course, and one of the women there that I became really good friends with, she's like, you know, do you want to try this cocaine? And I'm like, oh, okay, why not? You know, you see it all glamorized on TV, and this has got to be fantastic. And I started to fall in love with that because I was a blackout drinker at that point. And I think I was about 25 years old. And what it did was it allowed me to drink more without blacking out. Really? And so I just thought, now I've got even more control, because the purpose of drinking gave me more control, or so I felt. Obviously, when you black out, you don't remember anything. But I got into some really dark times there. Like, I would, you know, be at a house in the middle of nowhere trying to get high. And I'm just like, what am I doing here? Because I always thought I was a classy drunk, right? I mean, I'm not like anybody who needs recovery or anything. And, you know, the drugs just added to my alcoholism. And it was, again, because I wanted to mask everything. I wanted to hide. And I hated who I had become at that point in my life.
And you wanted to hide more.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. It's so funny. As you're saying, it gave you more control. I personally don't like ever being drunk because I'm a control freak, Tamar. So when we were young, I had a car. A lot of my friends would have to borrow their parents' car. So I was commuting to college, so I had a car. So anytime we went out, I'd say, I'm driving, because I didn't trust. And you have to remember, back in the 80s, you know, they didn't have the laws like they have now with drunken driver. But I was so afraid of getting behind the wheel of someone who was drunk that, right, I guess I knew well enough that I thought, you be in control, Connie. So I would always drive. And it was funny, because when the parents found out I was driving, they'd be like, oh, yeah, you could go out with Connie, because I guess they looked at me as safe because they knew I wasn't. See, it's so funny. And you had a great childhood. I had a great childhood. For me, it was my need to be in control that I didn't like that feeling, right, of the drunk being drunk or not in control. But I didn't even trust my friends. So it's so funny how control, it's an illusion, right? It was an illusion, and it was an illusion for me, really, in essence. So it's just funny how that same need has two very different paths. And that's why you're so good at what you do, because everybody's path is different. And yet there's a reason that we come to this place where, you know, addiction is what it is. And it's funny, because with COVID, you probably know the stats better than I do, but they were saying depression went up because of the isolation, right? Alcoholism and drug abuse went up because of the isolation and because of the depression. You know, in the United States, and I don't know about Canada, mental health is an issue. And mental health, everybody thinks, oh, schizophrenia. Mental health is depression, ADHD, right? Can be considered that. It's those extremes that what do we need to do to camouflage whatever that is? So it's a big issue, and everybody's afraid to talk about it. And there's help out there. So people don't always know where to go because they're ashamed and all these other things that I'm sure happened with you. I have another question before I ask my next question, but did alcoholism or drug abuse, was that something in your family that you found out after?
It was. I know, not my parents. I remember my dad, when I admitted that, you know, I had gone into recovery, he's like, well, you didn't catch that from me. I'm like, Dad, it's not something you catch, you know. It's something that I believe that either you've gone through enough trauma that, because it is possible, obviously, to go through a lot of trauma, and the statistics say that it happens a lot.
Sure.
Or it's just in your genes, right? Because my whole extended family, a lot of them suffer from addiction and alcoholism, right? I mean, our family reunions were a gong show. And so, you know, and when you're not looking for it, they were fun for me, you know, as a 14, 15 year old to go back to Holland and hang out with my family. I just thought, I have the best family ever. And I still think that, but man, now it's all coming to light.
Different perspective.
Exactly.
Yeah. So you did realize at some point that you had a problem with alcohol. Did people, like, before you realized it, did people realize it where they were trying to do interventions and stuff like that to try to get you to stop?
They were. My best friend from high school, we had lost touch for about 6-7 years. And after I had gone through a terribly codependent relation that ended up in abuse, and he actually just passed away a couple months ago from his addiction because he never made it out, right? But I remember just locking myself in my bedroom for 2 months, and I was drinking and doing cocaine every day, and I was just super depressed. And she actually, the first day that I went out after that, because I was afraid to go into public after that for a couple months, I went out with some friends and I ran into her, right? And so I knew that I would have to change some aspects of my life. And I met who is now my ex-husband at the time as well. And he said, you got to stop doing these harder drugs because I'm not going to be with you. And so even though I continued to drink very heavily and do other things, there was a lot of times where, you know, my best friend would be like, why do you keep doing this to yourself? Like, this is not you. And, you know, I'd be sitting there near blackout and bawling and just telling her, you know, I'm going to quit. I promise that it'll change. But of course, the next day you're so hungover and you don't remember all that stuff. And the only way to feel better is to do it again.
Yeah.
You know, like I remember having a coworker of mine. She has blacked out once in her life. I think she's in her 40s now. And she came that following weekend up to my desk, and I was already sober by this time. And she said, are you insane? And I said, what do you mean? And she goes, how could someone in their right minds black out and then think it's a good idea to do it again? And I'm like, that's why I don't drink anymore, right? But it wouldn't have mattered what anybody said, because I was only done when I had stopped digging, right? People always ask me, you know, what was your bottom like? How do you know you've hit your bottom? Your bottom is when you stop digging. And you can do all the interventions in the world with people, but if they don't want to, chances are they're going to go back out. So nobody could have told me anything different. I had to get to that place in my life.
It, you know, and I can only imagine, did your parents realize and try again to intervene and help? Because as a parent now, I would want to help, right? Did they try to do that for you as well?
They did not know the severity. They knew I drank. My dad was very tough love to me. Like, he would come over and we would have full on yelling matches, and he'd be like, you got to stop this. You're irresponsible. And I'm like, how dare he? Like, what a jerk, right? And my mom was the enabler. My mom saw this poor girl that couldn't pay her rent, would always bail me out. And it was always sob stories. It was like, mom, I'm so sorry. You know, my work missed a paycheck, and it was lie after lie. And until they actually read my first book, which both of them read it in 6 hours, they couldn't put it down. That was when everything was exposed, but they had no idea because my life was a complete lie.
It's fascinating how we have these personas that we put out there, right? Of what you want people to believe. And it's funny, Tamar, I think everybody does that to some extent. But you truly were camouflaging. How did you keep your job during all of this? Like, were you functioning alcoholic? Like, how did you do that?
So in my early 20s, I actually had a job where I was an order picker. So, you know, we would pick food and stuff for the restaurants. And this was kind of the first normal paying job I would say I got. And a friend of mine had got it for me. And I remember I went on a 7-day bender where I was awake and using for 7 days straight. The next day I went and I would call in sick, right? And this is kind of the start when I was using the harder drugs that this stuff became a big problem.
Yeah.
And I went into work after 7 days of no sleep. And I actually, ironically enough, I was lifting 5 kegs of beer. Funny that, you know, I was an alcoholic and lifting these kegs of beer, and I slipped a disc in my back. So then I went on 3 months of, you know, compensation for my back and had to go through therapy, but I was also given painkillers. I was also using that whole 3 months because I was getting paid, which made it even worse. So for that year, I would say there's a few jobs where I'd get the job, I'd lose the job, because when I was using harder drugs, it was almost impossible not to call in sick and not to be reliable. But when I actually moved away, and was only really drinking, I was a functioning alcoholic. It was the drugs that ended up killing me, right? So, I mean, even though I hit my bottom in 2011, I've hit way worse bottoms. And that period of time, I would just lose job after job after job, right? And I think it was after that really toxic relationship that I realized, okay, I gotta do something at least, right? So I wouldn't make a full change because I wasn't ready to do that. But I'm like, I'm just going to drink because drinking is not my problem.
Yeah. It's funny because, you know, you say the person has to be ready. You know, the old saying, right? Bring the horse to water, but you can't force them to drink. It's the exact same thing. Humans are humans, and we have to be the ones who are willing to do it because nobody could do the work for you. Nobody could have done this for you, right? You had to feel and come out the other side. No one could have made that easier for you. So it's really quite a journey. It really is. What did, you know, you talked about the, different, you tried at different times, right? You hit rock bottom different times. What did early recovery look like for you? And was, you know, with that recovery, was it easy to get sober or was it like, holy crap, you have no idea?
I did not want to get sober. I knew something had to change. At the end of 2011, I was 215 pounds. So I was really overweight. I was a chronic yo-yo dieter by this point. I was severely depressed. I had been off and on medication throughout my young adult. I was unhappily married. You know, we really hadn't connected well for like the past year. Mm. And I was suicidal. And I remember sitting on the floor one day with a bottle of pills. And I had a little dog. His name was Rudy. He was a little pug. And he just kind of sat there and looked at me. And they do that head tilt thing. And as I'm sobbing, just thinking, I don't want to hurt anybody anymore. Like, I'm tired of doing this because I knew that that wasn't who I was.
Yes.
You know, I'm a people pleaser, yes, big time, which is still something I struggle with.
Yes.
But I'm just like, I can't do this anymore. Like, I can't hurt those people I love. But something came over me at that point, and I had this desire to change, right? And I believe that it was this divine intervention that's like, Tamara, no, you're not. Like, you've done all this experience now. Like, we've educated you full on into the world of addiction.
Yes, yes.
Right? And so, but it was interesting because at first I thought, well, I'm overweight, right? If I actually lose the weight, if I lose 75 pounds, people will think I'm beautiful. People will love me. And so the first thing I did was hired a personal trainer, right? I did the New Year's resolution, went to the gym. I'm like, I'm going to make a fresh start. And so I remember her asking me like, Tamara, what is your goal? And we knew each other from high school, actually, which was funny. And I said, I want to lose 75 pounds and get into a bikini and go to a Las Vegas pool party because I want to feel comfortable in my own skin. And she laughed at me and said, okay. And so for the next 6 months, I went all in from one addiction to another because I suffer from a lot of cross addictions and food is one of them. So I worked out 6-7 days a week. I would eat chicken, broccoli, and rice every single day. I would have my one meal on the weekend. And I was like the straight A student, right? Because again, I wanted the recognition. But on the weekends, I would drink Thursday, Friday, Saturday. I'd plan out 3 beers. But to curb the drinking, I would drink a half a bottle of NyQuil to pass out because I couldn't stop when I started. So I had this great plan. And the funny thing was, though, is when I had to report to my trainer the following Monday, I would want to shout it from the rooftop, like, guess what? I only drank 9 beers this weekend because that was a record. Like, you know, 9 beers is usually an appetizer for me on the weekends.
Wow.
And I would just drink bottles of NyQuil. Like, I went through them like crazy.
Oh,
and I remember in June, I went away for a weekend with my ex-husband. And my trainer said, okay, what are you going to do to keep active, right? Because she knew I was an alcoholic. And funny enough, she was actually in recovery.
Oh.
And she had brought it up once and said, hey, you know, if you ever want to come with me, I'm like, I don't need that. Like, I have full control. Like, look what I've done since January and it's now June. And I remember going out and I brought one bottle of wine because I was going to show everybody that I could control my drinking. As soon as we got there, I drank that bottle of wine. I had a box of wine, a case of beer, and we ran a $200 bar tab that one night. And the whole rest of the weekend, I don't remember. I just remember coming out of it and phoning up my trainer and friend at the time and just said, I need help. Like, I can't do this. I obviously cannot control it. Yeah. And I asked her, I said, you know, did you know that I was an alcoholic? And she said, yeah. She said, no alcoholic has to talk about or justify their drinking. People either drink or they don't. And if you have to justify it, right? And those first few months, though, I would look at people, you know, in meetings, and I would be like, I'm not like you people. Like, I'm a classy drunk here. You know, I might dance on tables and stuff. I was a very functioning alcoholic at the time, right? But the more I listened, because she was like, just be open-minded. Listen for what you have in common instead of for what you don't. You're not going to be able to relate to everybody. And it just right away, I started to get it. I was like, oh, I'm so much like you people. Like, once I start, I can't stop.
Yes. Did you have relapses as you went through that road of recovery? Did you, or was it smooth sailing for you?
I wouldn't say smooth sailing, but relapse is not yet part of my story. And I say yet because I know that if I get complacent or I stop doing the work that I did in early recovery, I could easily slip up and go back. But I was very fortunate for people who weren't afraid to hurt my feelings in early recovery. They would call me out on my BS. And I needed that because it essentially saved my life.
Yes. Yeah. The whole topic is fascinating, and that you're so candid about it because you know you want to help others through this because you did. And it's funny that you said when you were sitting on the floor with your dog, the pills in hand, and you had that divine, and I do believe in divine intervention, but it was almost like, all right, we've educated you now on this world and what it is and how bad it is, right? So now you go out and teach and educate and coach and get people through to come out the other side, right? So what led you, do you think, led you to discovering your purpose? Because you can have that divine moment, but then you went forward and actually did something about it. So what does that discovering your purpose, how did that happen for you, do you think?
It took a while because I remember after my first year, I had lost 75 pounds and I was now sober. And it was almost as though I felt like I graduated with some diploma on how to be sober. And I quickly realized that that wasn't the case, that this was something that was ongoing. But I was always told to be grateful for what you have. And I practice gratitude every single day today. But I think that also justified me to not really take as much action, to just be grateful. Okay, I have a full-time job. I should be happy. I'm in a relationship. I should be happy. But I wasn't. And I always felt this burning desire that I had more within me. But because I had never learned how to deal with that negative self-talk and the limiting beliefs yet, I always told myself, who am I to do this kind of stuff, right? And I had helped people get sober at that point. So I was helping new people. And when the light went on in their eyes, just like it did with me, when it was like, I could actually do this thing, like I could actually create a better life, and you see them start to get everything back in their life, that was what really did it for me. And so after about 5 years of complacency, because I'm the kind of person who has to touch the stove a couple times before I realize it's hot.
You're funny.
It does not happen right away for me. You're and it's funny. Still today. I'm like, I think I'm going to try that a few times just to prove that it's a bad idea.
You're so funny.
And I remember going to my best friend's place and I'm like, I need some motivation. Like, I'm putting on this weight again. I've gained 40 pounds. Like, I don't want to get here. I started doing the quick fixes again, even though I knew that wasn't the way to do things. And she's like, why don't you listen to podcasts? And I said, okay, what's a podcast? Believe it. And this is early 2019.
I love it.
I know. So, you know, I'm new to podcasting and I'm new to listening to podcasting, but, I started doing this self-analysis on myself through these podcasts, right? I started going, okay, what do I want to work on first? And I started listening to health podcasts, and that's actually how I met Adam, because I joined, you know, I joined his boot camp community and I started to meet other people. And then I went to an event of his, and I remember sitting across the table with Allison Melody from Food Heals, and some of them were having a glass of wine, and she's like, what's your story? And I said, what do you mean? What's my story? She goes, well, you're not drinking. So I'm assuming you don't drink. And I said, you're right. I'm a retired professional. That's how I answer that question when people ask me. And she said, Tamar, you have a story. You have a voice. You need to share that story and change the world. And that really resonated with me, because at that point, I'm sitting around a table with all these podcasters who are like sharing their experience. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the first time in my life where I actually got that maybe I can do more.
I love it. And that was a shout out to our good friend, Adam Shibley, who's just an amazing, amazing person. And just, he lost a lot of weight too. And that's what started him in the podcasting world. And he's genius, with plus he has the voice, right? He's just got a dreamy voice. I know I tease him all the time. What I say, I have a pod crush on him because of that voice. And the funny thing is he's just a love of a guy on top of that. He's a big teddy bear. So shout out to Adam. And that's how you and I met through Adam, through his pod pals. We were on a networking call and tomorrow night. And I'm like, I like your story. I really would love to have you on Enlightenment of Change because I think people's journey of change is different from easy change to things like Tamar's story. And I think that you are inspiring and you're just a really nice person. So you're my kind of people because you're not afraid. You're not afraid to be you, which is so funny hearing how you felt you didn't fit in and now how you kind of do love your skin, right? Which is just such a beautiful journey and part of your story too. What was it like? And we're almost out of time, but what was it like writing your book, Hope Elevated, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. And did that bring up the emotions for you? And was that where you kind of, this is my path forward? Like what was that for you, that whole experience?
It was scary. I had been encouraged to write it for a while and I just thought because of my history, I'm no good at this, right? Like I can't write. I almost failed English 12. And like, I kid you not, my English 12 teacher put my exam down on my desk and she said, Tamar, you need, I think it was 53% to pass. She goes, if you don't pass, I will make your life next year a living hell. And so I
gauntlet,
passed just
right,
barely.
She threw the gauntlet down to motivate you. That's so funny.
Exactly. But I thank goodness for my therapist who's also in recovery. And I just relied on her because I had gotten to a point where I loved myself enough to write about it. And all these things started to come back and all these experiences that I had long since stuffed away. And as I finished the book, though, and I went through all these therapy sessions, I started to realize I don't have to be ashamed anymore of who I was because life was training me for this very moment, right? And I had already started coaching people. And I'm like, if I could be this vulnerable and share who I was and who it's made me, more importantly, because I wouldn't take it back for the world. I mean, sometimes I wish I had done it sooner, so I would have had a lot more. But I mean, I need a little bit more time than some people. So I just needed some additional training. But it was so therapeutic to write that book.
And people are benefiting from it. So it's like a win-win, right? The win-win situation where it was therapeutic for you to get rid of that shame, share your story, almost chronologically, write about it so that, it's a memoir in essence, but it also shows people potential paths for them to move forward, right? And come out the other side better, stronger, healthier, right? All of those things. Last question. How did you manage to start your business, write two books, leave your corporate job? And this all happened in the past year, guys, plus do the podcast. So she's a newbie to podcasting too. Crazy, you know?
You know what? I know COVID's been terrible, but it's part of the reason I wasn't traveling for business anymore. I was stuck at home and I thought now is the time. And I just felt this desire to do something, right? Because I started to really have faith that if I believed enough that I could make anything happen. And so in April, I decided I'm going to get a business name. I'm going to start this. I got a couple clients. Then I wrote the first book. I decided in November after some friends of mine are like, now what? Like, we want more. We need you to write a second book.
And I love it. Love it.
I decided, okay, I'm going to listen to them. Right. So I did that as well. And earlier this year, I had actually thought about, taking a leave of absence because I still recognized that I had that fear of financial insecurity. Sure. Right. But I was doing well and I had already set myself up that I could, take that leap of faith. And I knew because every time I took that leap of faith, it felt good. And even how scary it was, I did it anyway. And then when I reached that other side of that, where you get that kind of you know, the fear of failure and everything, I'm like, I'm just going to move through that one step at a time. And so I just, you know, we were talking before where I had a coach friend of mine that said, you know, why wouldn't you just take the leap of faith? And she said, when you quit drinking, did you leave a bottle of vodka in the cupboard just in case you wanted to go back? And right then she spoke my language. I gave my notice because I'm like, I want to help people for a living. Like I was already waking up at 3:30, 4 a.m. every single day. Because once I discovered that my purpose was to help empower other people to embrace like their like be authentic,
yes,
right, and live up to their potential, I want to help them rise in their recovery, right? I want to help them create the life so good that they never want to go back, because I believe that finding my purpose has honestly given me that life where I can't even imagine going back anymore. I don't get complacent anymore. I can't wait to wake up in the morning. And I just followed that purpose and it allowed me to do what I love today full time.
And that in of itself, right, is this great success story. And it, you know, it's that unfortunate that you had to go through all of that torment because it was your education for what you're doing now and you needed it. And it, you couldn't have, you know, as horrible as it sounds, you couldn't have bypassed it and be the person you are right here. And I think that's the element of change tomorrow where people think, you know, I don't want hardship. Hardship is where you can compare it to when life is good, right? And when you do find your purpose and you are living authentically, we need the black, we need the white, right? We need the opposites. We need the rain and then we need the sunshine. If it was sunny all the time, we would not be grateful for it when it's out, right? So it's all of these educational pieces that bring us to where we are, that change is inevitable. And I think we were saying this before we started recording tomorrow, right? It's a choice. And even if that choice of writing the book wasn't the right one, you have another choice right behind it that you can always pivot and shift and create another choice and then another choice and then another choice until you do get it right. So that's, yeah, you know, but your choice of drinking and then doing the drugs, they were choices, right? They were choices though that led you to this, what you're doing now. So, you know, I know people think change is bad. I shouldn't say that. A lot of people think change is bad. A lot of people see change as opportunity. Do you feel like now with all of that information, do you find when you think of change, you do see the opportunity?
Every time, even when I'm, because I still struggle with anxiety and depression, right? I mean, I was telling you a few weeks ago, I'm like, oh my God, like I don't have that, you know, steady income that I'm used to, but I still have an income. And I think you have to make that change, right? As soon as you make that change and you move through, because we have that resistance to change, which I talk about with my clients all the time, that's how you see the growth. If you're not ready to get out of that comfort zone, you're not going to see all these amazing things happen. That's right. And I think, unfortunately, so many people say no to themselves, you know, when they're like, I don't want to invest in myself. They're saying no to their personal development and growth.
Yes.
So I just decided, no, change has to be a part of my life. And even when I'm feeling depressed, I'm like, what little change can I make today that's going to put me one step in the right direction? It doesn't matter how small it is.
That's right.
Just one thing every day.
Yeah, I love James Clear's book called Atomic Habits, right? It's that one like degree of change, not a 10-degree change, one degree of change, and how that changes the trajectory of your life. So if you could choose that every day. And it's funny, you know, I start the show with that element of change, but being a sales expert, and you know, Adam and Michael Neely, a shout out to him, they convinced me, it wasn't hard to convince me to start the second show, which is the Heart-Centered Sales Leader, because I'm sales, right? That's my zone of genius. And it's that still that element of change, though, where, you know, business owners still feel like, oh, sales, no. But you're a business owner. Your zone of genius is whatever it is, right? In your case, but you still have to sell on why people should work with you, right? So sales is a part of everything we do. Even when you had your corporate job, why should I give you the promotion over someone else? You're selling yourself. So sales is so important, yet we're taught to put up those barriers. You know, you talked about barriers, but we put up those barriers of sales is icky and sleazy, you know, because of movies like Wolf of Wall Street and because of, you know, Madoff, right? So we're taught in our regular lives, change is bad. People are out to get you, right? Don't let your guard guard down, you know, the good guys finish last, all of those bad kinds of phraseology. And yet change is where the magic happens. So for me, it's changing. I'm on a mission tomorrow. Like, you're on a mission to help people see their empowerment, right? To take control of your future. You can, everybody can do this, right? Tomorrow and I are not special. Well, we are, of course.
Well,
but
of course.
We are, of course. But everybody really can do it. And you have the tools for that, those roads of people on addiction, right? And those other, inflictions that, right? It's real. Depression is real. All these things we started at the top of the show. And same thing. Sales should not be icky and sleazy, right? We're on our mission to get that message out, because I think you and I both, it's about changing people to just become better. And for me, I really want to help people for it to become easier and not like, oh, like that dread, right? It's, I want people to be excited. Like you said, I get up every morning like, woohoo! What am I going to do today? And that's what you want to share with people as well. And I think our messages are important. They're different, but they're not, right? Humans are humans. We really are all the same. And change, I think, is a part of it. So thank you so much for being on. I do want to share your website. It's theroadforward.ca. She's Canada peeps. So it's theroadforward.ca. If you have questions for Tamar directly, Tamar is T-A-M-A-R at theroadforward.ca. So please connect with her. Please ask her those questions. Go to the website. See what she's all about. I think that you have an amazing energy, and you come from this place of just love and warmth, that anyone that is in trouble, I do think that you're the life preserver, right? Like, you're throwing it out there. We're throwing out the life preserver. Catch on, hook on to Tamar and see how she can help you. But you're just lovely. I'm so happy for you. And I'm so happy that this year has brought you so much change, but so much in such a positive way. And more to come, right? The what's the song by the road is the it's unwritten, the chapter's unwritten. Leona Lewis, is it Leona Lewis? The next chapter's unwritten, right? That your book is unwritten. What is the next chapter for you? What is the next chapter for everybody listening? What's the next chapter for me? We could do anything we want, right? The road is unwritten for us at this point. It's all choice, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And Connie, thank you so much for having me on the show. I love pleasure. Your energy too. Oh, so
thank you. Yes. High energy. You feel me. real pleasure. Thank you again, Tamar. Please check her out at theroadforward.ca. Check me out at whitmanassoc.com. Ton of free resources, my masterclasses, books, free stuff, all there. whitmanassoc.com. Please help allow us to help you on your journey of change. Thank you again, Tamar. I'm so excited and happy that I've met you and that you're in my orbit. And I just wish you so much more success in the coming years. Yeah. Keep doing it, man. You're rocking it out there, and people need you. So happy that you've been on my show. Truly an honor.
Thank you, Connie.
Yeah, real pleasure. And you guys, I hope you will join me weekly as we question and build and discover together that change is inevitable. It's here every day. Choose it, embrace it, and make that movement forward. And I hope, again, my guests and I provide some tools, strategies, and tips that you can apply immediately. It's all about application and result for me. You've been listening to Enlightenment of Change with me, your host, Connie Whitman, on webtalkradio.net. Thank you all. And I really do wish you an inspired week. And I hope that you choose whatever change is right for you. Make the choice, not making a choice and trying to stay where you are, because it's just the way it is. That's not an excuse. You're still making a choice to not move forward. So I hope tomorrow's story has inspired you to take that leap of faith and take that step forward. One little step is all it takes. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in, and I wish you success in the coming week. Thanks, everybody.